Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is a special holiday edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Joe Vaklevic of Standard Grain out of Chicago, Illinois. Well, gentlemen, for this last Commodity Week of the 2017 year, I'd like to get a list of items that maybe we should discuss. Chuck Shelby, let's start with you. What's on your list for the year?
Well, I think it's been a kind of interesting year. We've seen the market swing pretty aggressively. We've seen a record corn yield. We've seen a bean market that's reacted pretty significantly. And as we all know, Todd, as producers, it's kind of a struggle here to make much money, not much margins out there as we look going into 2018. That'll be the focus, is try to make your farm profitable in 2018.
So we'll put that down as for finances per acre. Joe Vaklevic, how about for you?
South American weather and demand are the two biggest things in play this time of year, and they're intertwined to a pretty significant extent, especially in the soybean market. So those are your two big issues here short term. Bigger picture here, I'm kind of interested in what's going to happen in the outside markets. You know, there's a lot going on. We've got a big tax reform bill. We've got some fluctuations in the currency. The Fed is unwinding all sorts of assets. I'd love to see some inflation affect these commodity markets. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but certainly something that's possible.
And finally, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor on your list.
You know, to kind of take off where Joe ended up, and it's the one thing I've kind of talked about, is I've been out on the road here over the last month. It's the question that's dug in my mind: are we in a position where we could see investment money? I'm talking about this long-term capital that tends to come through index funds. Are we in a position to see some of that starting to come back into the commodities and come back into the grains itself? And this has to do with a lot of price interrelationships and even things Joe mentioned, like the passage of the tax bill, et cetera. And, you know, you have to start to ask the question, what's left in this game to keep people having most of their investment portfolio in the equity market today?
Well, I have a question about that. Let's start there. So I was of the mind that fund money was already in the marketplace because there were better returns in the commodities than there were without very much inflation in the rest of the potential places that they could park that money. So you're of a different view.
Well, I'm not of a different view. I think there's money already in commodities itself. I just wonder if we're poised to start seeing maybe even more of it flow back in. I've been a longtime watcher of the ratio between the S&P 500 and what now is known as the Continuous Commodity Index. It's the old CRB, and I watch it because it's got such a long history. But that ratio itself is back roughly about 6.6 to 1. And if we go back into the 1999-2000 period, that ratio itself was up at about 7.1, 7.2 to 1. And if you'll remember, there at 2000 was really the beginning of the big wave of index or investment money starting to flow into commodities itself, looking at a way to diversify away from the equities and the stocks. Yes, part of the crash in the ratio at that point was, you know, the tech bubble bursting at that point in time. But I think we're poised to see this. And interesting, if you look at grains relative to commodity indices, the grains are even cheap relative to commodity indices. So I kind of think about that, you know, an investment money is always looking for something that is cheap and has low risk.
However, on the flip side of that, and Chuck Shelby, I'll have you take this up for just a bit, is the fundamentals of the marketplace. We have a really big carryout for corn, and we have a really big carryout for soybeans.
Well, I think that helps trigger these funds to make their moves certain directions. I mean, they laid on the corn, and that really intensified when USDA showed a record corn yield. The wheats had excessive funds being short for quite some time. here recently. Looks like this week in the beans, they flipped from being long to being short. So the real fundamentals, I think, come into play. But I guess at this point, we could call funds a fundamental that we didn't used to deal with as such, a heavy hitter. But they're certainly a component of the market today. And I guess I agree with Dale that, anything that's this cheap, eventually there's only one direction to go. And the fund money likes to, I think, over-exaggerate whether it be up or down in markets. And that's something to look forward to as we go forward.
Well, this might be nice to end the year on the idea that there is some potential for the marketplace to move higher. Joe Vaklavic, do you agree with this assessment for the funds?
Yeah, sure. There's potential for the market to go higher. But I think that some people are perhaps underestimating what could be more downside in the market. I'm not a bear in these markets by any means, I don't think, not from these prices. But there are a lot of wild cards out there right now. One of them in particular, I think, is this NAFTA situation. I have nightmares that I'm going to turn on my screen on a Sunday night and Trump withdrew from NAFTA over the weekend and corn gaps lower and you see a two-handle on this thing. That's a real possibility. And this administration has done some great things, but it's certainly a wild card when it comes to policy like that. So I'd love to think that, yeah, we're going to see some short covering in corn. We're going to see some short covering in wheat. Maybe we've seen the worst of the selling pressure in the bean market for the moment. That's probably what happens if I had to guess. But there's still risk here, and there's some different types of risks, especially with this new administration in the White House, I think.
So NAFTA is one of the promises that the president made, withdrawal from NAFTA, said we will do that. And he's been ticking off, Dale, the promises he's made. It doesn't look like NAFTA is going anywhere in the negotiations. What happens if he does pull out?
I think if he does pull out, we'll have a short-term jerk to the downside. But we got to remember, realistically, when we look at NAFTA from an agricultural perspective, we enjoy one huge advantage over everyone else and in dealing both with Canada and Mexico, and that's called proximity. And with that, you have a freight advantage because it's easy to get down to the different consuming points if we go south. Northbound trade, into Canada more than anything as far as agriculture is concerned, you get some meat trade. But when you look at Mexico, per se, which is something the grain industry worries about the most, their whole consumption industry really grew up around the logistics of bringing stuff in out of the U.S. So, if they start bringing in commodities, grain commodities from other areas of the world, that's going to have to come into a port. And then you're going to have to deal with a transportation infrastructure that's not necessarily directly oriented to these new consuming areas. It'll be a negative, but I think it's only a short-term negative, and I would argue pretty strongly it's one a lot of people would probably buy.
So you're of a mind that usage by the by Mexico would continue at roughly the same pace, but that the NAFTA loss of NAFTA would just simply be show up as a lower price in the marketplace.
Initially it would, but I think you recover out of it pretty quickly.
And you think you'd recover out of it. You don't think it would be a permanent loss like a nickel or 15 cents or something off the price of corn.
I don't know how to quantify, what a permanent loss would be at this point, how much to put on it. There'd be a drag there naturally because, they could source stuff elsewhere just like the Brazilians are trying to source wheat out of Russia. But again, there, you have a freight disadvantage. How do you deal with that?
So for the corn market, and let me see where each of you are, old and new crop sales. I think Joe Vaklavic, I'll start with you. For producers who have both, and they will have both yet to make, what should they be considering at this time?
There's no good way to fix this price. I mean, you can't take 350 futures and just magically turn it into something a whole lot better. I mean, everybody's talked about the carry in the market, and yes, that's an advantage, especially if you've got the bins, you've got the storage. So your best bet, if you have to do something, is to take advantage of your bins and your storage and store the stuff till July, August, September, if you can, and you know, sell the futures, wait on a basis bump. We've actually seen a little bit of basis improvement here recently. I'm not sure if it's improved necessarily for deferred delivery, but, you know, at least lock in that portion of it. And that's all you can do. You know, I'd love to just hope that the market's going to go higher and we'll be able to do a little bit better on some of these deferred contracts. That's my hope. But, I mean, that's the very obvious answer, is that you sell some of this carry and none of this stuff's going to be glamorous. It's not going to make you rich. You'll be lucky if you break even, but that's the hand that we're dealt here.
Chuck, old and new crop for corn?
Kind of a similar look at corn, trying to take advantage of the basis. We simply have to worry about, too, on the January crop report of USDA, there are folks that believe the yield is going to go up some. The demand is good. I think the livestock demand will certainly be under this market, but look for small opportunities to take advantage of. And certainly, I think, looking ahead at 2018, December 18 corn, $3.90 to $4 futures. Looking at March of 19 at $4 to maybe $4.08. Targets to get a part of the crop going next year on 2018.
Dan, Dale, your thoughts?
You know, they both mentioned, you know, the old classic storage hedge, and that is one way to make a few extra pennies out of this game at this point going forward. And you're going to have to use that certainly to try to pad the price you ultimately get out of the corn. The one thing I note in here from a couple of different directions, number one, when we look ahead to the January crop report on the 12th, I think it is, if we look at the last four quote-unquote record high yield years, every January report in those, the yield has come down. It has not gone up, which I find rather interesting up at these new higher levels that we're dealing with here of recent. The second thing is, and, you know, it kind of fits into the equation, there's a 20-week low due out there about the middle of January. Does it come before or after the report? I don't know. But that cycle coming in at that point tells me that, you know, once we get that behind, I think we got some kind of a rally coming along. Is it South American weather scare still going to play into the mix? We got to think about Brazil, you know, and the second crop corn looks like it's going to get planted late again this year, which makes it more vulnerable down the pike. The other thing I think is important is kind of keep an eye on the wheat market, because, you know, not only are we vulnerable out in the Great Plains here, we got to keep an eye on what's going on over in the Black Sea area, and that it's been a lot of years since we've had even modest winter kill over there. Are they due for it again? And if wheat would get a breath of air and start to rally, that pulls the corn along with it. I think people need to pay attention to wheat, even if they don't raise it.
Chuck Shelby, the grain stocks report is due out on the 12th as well. Livestock usage looks like it should be big. Is this an important report for the marketplace?
Well, I think so. As far as, in our opinion, USDA has underestimated the demand for corn from livestock. We got record hog numbers. They're increasing, building more buildings every day, Todd, and the cattle herd has grown. The cattle weights are getting heavier. We just look at the quarterly grain stocks for a key to show that the demand from livestock has been bigger than USDA has been touting. So I think that's an important thing we're watching in corn. It might be a little bit positive.
Joe Vaklovic, your view of the grain stocks report and the possibilities for the corn market over the next 3 months.
I don't think that report on its own is going to be a trend changer by any means. Could we run into a fairly friendly number and see a little bit of a bounce here? Certainly, but it's probably not going to be enough to take your spot month futures to $4 if that's what you're looking for. What we really need here is a weather issue, and we need a production problem somewhere. We need a real production problem. You know, we've just had too many consecutive cycles of big crops, both here and abroad, and it's just dug us into a hole here. So, I mean, I don't know how we fix this thing. I don't know if you can make a case that we build up enough demand in the next 6 to 8 months to bail us out of this old crop thing. We really just need a weather issue. We need some sort of supply disruption, and we just haven't had a real big one in a long time.
Dale, you felt like and Chuck both felt like you might be a bit more friendly to this marketplace. Can you lay out a view that gives us, under current fundamental conditions or something that changes it, that you can already see on the horizon, a better view for the corn market?
Well, you know, Joe is right, and you know, to dig us out of the hole, we do need a supply issue to get the ball rolling. There's no doubt about it. But we have to remember that this time of year, and because they've become such a big influence, that Brazil could be a game that plays into this scenario here. You know, we've had some talk already that second crop corn acreage is going to be down a little bit. If, in fact, their rainy season would shut off timely or even a little soon at that point, you know, there could be a weather scare. And I'm not saying we're going to rock it right back to four, but, you know, you could easily see nearby corn, the March contract, float from where it is playing down here around 350, maybe getting up 370, 75. And again, because we have a big crop, you're going to keep those big storage premiums in it too. So you're still going to be looking to play the storage hedge game when you sell stuff. But it is going to have to come via some kind of a supply scenario to get the turn made. And I think that's an important distinction that Joe made.
Chuck Shelby, acreage is always something we like to talk about. I know it's a bit early still to talk about that for the coming year. However, USDA's numbers are out. Informa had some numbers that came out in the last week and a half or so. What are your considerations for 2018 and acreage in the United States?
As we look at 2018, Todd, we've got Informa dropping acres on corn down in 89 area, raising the bean acres. When producers look at the math on growing corn against soybeans out there, until the recent break, I think beans were kind of a natural draw to bring guys into more bean acres. But one of the problems we have, the wheat acres continue to fall, and when we look at that, that's going to go somewhere. Possibly one bright spot that might pull some acres away is cotton starting to get some attention. It's up into the $77 range. So going forward, I think corn acres, in my mind, will slip back. Maybe the first time in history we see the bean acres really jump significantly. It costs a lot of money to put out corn. Beans are lower cost and have outperformed. It's been easier to sell closer to $10 beans, and it's been easier to sell near $4 corn. So from a producer standpoint, trying to make sales, it's just been easier to get closer to 10 than it is on 4 on corn.
I have been on the road all week with Todd Hubbs, the agricultural economist from here on campus. He drops a number out for the 2018 growing season for the national average price for soybeans of $8.80. Now, he happens to be about 10 cents lower for the national average price for this marketing year at 9.20 as well for soybeans. I'm wondering from each of you, and I think I'll start with you, Chuck, on this for soybeans, whether you think producers need to aggressively market the 2018 soybean crop earlier rather than later.
For both corn and beans, it's been the most profitable way to go is be aggressive on those sales. Eventually, one something's going to make that a wrong decision. But when you look at a farmer's budget, you need to be aggressive after $10 future beans and $3.90 to $4 corn futures, and then try to defend those, because both the other guys on the panel have discussed today, we got big carryouts. It's going to take an event to really turn the corner and really get the funds to go the other direction and really get buyers to come into the market. So aggressive sales in the $3.90 to $4 range. There's flexible ways to do that on corn. There's flexible ways to do it on beans. But yeah, I think you really need to look at both of those.
Dale Durkles, you and your thoughts on soybean sales for new crop?
You know, the one thing I keep coming back to in the beans, and this goes back to the long-term cycles, it's a possibility the low we had last summer was both the 2- and the 3-year low, or that could come here when we see a shorter-term cycle bottom here as we move into January itself. But because we're moving now into the latter part of the window for both these 2- and 3-year cycles to bottom, I see something out there that the market's telling me is going to break, that's going to give us some upside movement in the beans, even more so than the corn. So as I look at it, I'm in no hurry. I'll start pricing some beans at $10, and I did price a little bit, I think, at $10.20 on November, but I'm not wading into it real heavily just yet.
How about you, Joe Baklevic?
I am interested in being profitable in 2018, so therefore I'm not interested in becoming overly aggressive this early, especially if the sales don't make money. You know, the price of the crops doesn't matter. It's all the relationship between the price of the crops and what it costs you to grow it. So, you know, everybody's going to be different. And if you could sell your whole 2018 corn crop right now and make 20 cents a bushel on it, then I'd probably do it. But that's not the case for most people. So I'm going to try to maintain a somewhat optimistic view here and go with the idea that there will be marketing opportunities. They may be few and far between. I think 2017 in the corn market was one of the worst that we've had in a long time in terms of marketing opportunities. You really had one marketing opportunity around the 4th of July, and that was it with a weather scare. But that's not normal. Usually you get at least two or three. So I'm optimistic that there will be marketing opportunities. You've got to keep it realistic. You don't want to get bullish on rallies. You want to be pessimistic of rallies. And just keep in mind that weather scares, you know, 9 out of 10 times, a weather scare in these markets is going to be an opportunity to sell some grain. We just saw it with the soybeans in relation to Argentina. You might have another couple of South American weather hiccups along the way here over the next 3 or 4 months, and you still got a whole nother U.S. growing season ahead of us. So I'm not going to just jump in and make a bunch of sales just to make a bunch of sales. I'm still very much interested in trying to make money here. We're all in business to do that after all.
Yeah, and to be clear, you're not going to do that on soybeans either, right?
No, both crops. I mean, soybeans, I think you'll have an easier time trying to make money. I mean, everybody's setup is different, but it seems like, you know, if you get no beans back above $10, which could happen easily on a weather hiccup, you know, that's probably something that a lot of guys will be able to make work. This corn, we've got a little bit more of an uphill battle.
You know, and Todd, you want to remember one other distinction right now as we're recording this. We have no clue yet what our crop insurance guarantees on corn and beans are going to be. And you really, you know, at this early of a date, you know, you want to be a little careful because you don't want to lock yourself into a sale that ultimately ends up being even moderately below what that crop insurance guarantee is going to be.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I suppose producers after last year will be of a mind, especially for soybeans, that they can go ahead and make those sales sooner rather than later. But you're advising caution. Is that caution at 10 or 15 or 20% of sales or just caution period?
I put on a 10% sale. You know, if a lot of people, you know, if they have a revenue policy and they're using, you know, 80 or 85%, you know, then you got, you know, let's say somewhere around 15%, you can go ahead and lock in. But, you know, to go beyond that when you don't even know your crop insurance guarantee, I think is a little bit too aggressive at this point in time.
But aren't the fundamentals, Dale, at this point looking for world soybean supplies to be terribly burdensome given that both the Argentine and the Brazilian crop, and I know it's still early in their season, look to be awfully big?
Think about this. We have raised arguably 3 record crops in a row. 2 here in the U.S. that sandwiched a record crop in South America last spring. And yet you don't have a soybean market that has gotten back below $9. And what I think a lot of people need to respect and understand, when you look at the soybean complex in particular, and it's the protein side, we won't even talk about the oil side. The protein side of this mix just has such fundamental demand strength. Yes, we've got a lot of supply, but if we didn't have the demand that we do today, we wouldn't see soybeans still trading here at 9.5 instead of below the $9 low that we had last summer. People cannot ignore demand in a complex because that is your stabilizing factor when you have big supplies like we do now, and demand is able to absorb everything we've thrown at it so far.
Is there anything with China that might throw a wrench into that? China being the demand for soybeans across the whole of the planet.
Is North Korea in the situation there? That's a pretty big powder keg that is not going to go away, and they're one of our biggest customers. And as we go forward in time, I just don't think that situation calms down, and it's always something that would be another negative, like NAFTA getting canceled, if something really happens where we're we're really into something that, you know, is a military conflict.
Well, I was going to suggest, you know, everybody talks about China being the driving force, but when you look at the protein sector itself, you know, you have to start understanding as well over the course of the last probably 6 to 7 years, you know, you've had other countries that have been participating in this game as well, whether you look into Southeastern Asia, whether you look at Mexico. There's a lot of pieces to this puzzle. China is the elephant in the room, no doubt about it, but you have demand that is growing elsewhere at the same time that really is not being adequately talked about, in my view, even though if China would pull out, if something would happen to negate, you know, demand out of China, or something would negatively impact demand out of China, certainly, you know, it would have a pretty negative repercussion at any point in time.
Well, let me ask a different question, and Joe and Chuck, I'll start with you on this one. Maybe Chuck, you can come in. Do you think USDA's ending stocks number for soybeans this year is correct at the moment?
It's probably more correct than it's been for the last several years, because they've always, you know, underestimated demand, and we had a tighter carryout at the end of the year than we started. They're probably closer with the, you know, build and yields, but it's still a relative tight number. When you look at, again, the demand is growing. It's very strong. As we go forward, we're going to need more and more beans. It is true we keep growing good crops, but I just don't know a year when we're not going to have a good crop. The longer we go from 2012, the more likely it is to happen. But if we come in here with 91 or 91.5 million bean acres, to start out the year, USDA using a trend line yield, we're going to have a pretty big carryout on paper.
Just for reference, Joe, our carry-in, or what was left over from last year, was 301 million bushels. Expected carry-out for this year is now 445 million bushels for soybeans. Is that on target?
It could be. It's greatly going to be a function of South American weather and how much beans we can export. I mean, exports are half of our demand base. So if they run into crop problems, then their number's too high. If they have good crops down there, then the number's too low. I think it's really as simple as that. I wouldn't read too much into it. I'm fine. I have no issue with the number for the moment. Given what we know, I think it's about as good as you could do. I could probably make the argument that their export number's still a little bit too high, but, you know, a lot can happen with South America here the next 3 or 4 months.
And Dale, I'll phrase it a little differently for you, because you said, look, we still have $9 beans and we have 445 million bushel carryout, but we still have $9 plus cash soybeans in the marketplace for Central Illinois even today.
Yeah, you know, the USDA number, like both of the other guys said, you know, I think their ending stocks number is probably pretty well on the mark for what we know today. You know, a couple of years ago, or about it was on the 16 crop, you know, the first one out of the chute in May, you know, they got real aggressive with exports, as it were, you know, and I think they finally adjusted to this reality of demand around the world and build it into their export equation. So I have no reason to think that we're going to go back to the old traditional where the export number at some point magically goes up, unless, like Joe says, you have a significant issue develop here in the next couple of months in South America. But I think, you know, that beans are still staying above the lows that we had last summer. It really is just a function of owing to how strong demand is at this point and continues to absorb supplies. We keep pushing into it. So we've got to push them probably even higher, the supply, to break the back of that $9 low we had last summer on the board.
A couple of items left before I get to the final word from each of you, and I think maybe from Chuck and from each of you, maybe. But let's start with you, Chuck. Tax reform just completed in Washington, D.C. The Federal Reserve says it will increase interest rates. Impact for inflation at all there on either of those?
Yeah, I think inflation will, you know, certainly be an impact that we're going to see, not only from interest rates, but from if the tax breaks get the economy going, which is what it looks like, world demand. I just think inflation's a factor. One bad thing for producers, though, from the standpoint of operating loans and things, our interest rates are going to go up, not nearly as bad as they might have been in the past, but they're certainly going up, not going down, so it's a higher input cost.
Joe Baklovic, these two things were on your list of items to discuss for the day. You have some thoughts?
I don't know if I have any thoughts or predictions on it. I just know that it's something that is going to be an issue here moving forward. The Fed is going to continue this asset unwind for a long time. They're going to sell off all the treasuries, all these mortgage-backed securities that they bought after that financial crisis. So is it going to have an impact and result in inflation? I don't know. I think it's one of many possibilities. It's going to be a wait-and-see type deal.
And Dale, your thoughts maybe on this issue, and if not that, then your final word for the day.
You know, it's really hard to look forward. The one thing I do know with the change in the tax policy that all of us are going to be dealing with, when I look into 2018, all of a sudden I have a lot of uncertainties about ultimately what all the little moving parts of the economic puzzle are going to look like, because we're throwing something totally new into the mix here at this juncture. So we're all going to be learning as we go through this over the next 1, 2, 3 months. And I think it's how this picture unfolds and evolves from where we are today that really is going to be more revealing about what kind of changes are coming than anything we could say about it today.
And your final word, Dale.
Well, I still go back to the old thing. I think something's getting ready to break in here when I look at some pictures or timing in some of the cycle counts I have. So, you know, I look at 2018 with some optimism, but again, we're all going to have to be prudent, diligent marketers through that period too.
Dale Durkles is with AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana. Your final word?
Well, as we go forward in 18, again, we got to have some optimism. That's why we're producers and produce a crop. Look for opportunities to make your farm profitable. That's going to be probably a difficult task in this year, but certainly a lot of things can happen to make this market change. We'll see, we go into 2018 with optimism and look for opportunities.
And Joe Baklovic from Standard Grain in Chicago.
Prices are down and out, so I'm not seeing much here in terms of marketing opportunities from a flat price standpoint. I think as I start the calendar year, you've got to control what you can control, and that means knowing your costs, means knowing everything about your operation, the way that it functions, the way that cash flows, that sort of thing. I think there will be marketing opportunities, and if you know everything about every little piece of information regarding the finances on your farm, it'll make the marketing decisions easier when we do see those opportunities. And I do certainly believe that we will see opportunities throughout the calendar year.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find our program and listen to it in its entirety on demand online at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Joe Baklovic of Standard Grain in Chicago, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.